If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 220, sponsored by Manscaped.
Manscaped.
Step into 2024 with confidence thanks to Manscaped, where resolutions are met and hairs are neatly kept. As the new year approaches, why not make self-improvement a breeze by keeping your body well-groomed? Introducing Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, the ultimate all-inclusive kit designed to help you feel clean, cut, and confident as you should. Featuring the Powerhouse Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, the next-gen trimmer ensures precision and ease when tackling your toughest hair. So kick off 2024 with a trim above the rest and use code WESAYTHINGS20 at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you, as always, to Manscaped. This is their final sponsored episode of the year. We're hoping that they will re-up with us for future episodes, but they have been the longest-standing sponsor. You guys love them, of course, because they have every product that you could possibly need. You need conditioner, shampoo, chapstick for some reason they have. I don't know why that's part of it, but they do. They have ball toner. I used it on my taint because it gets really dry when I travel for some reason. Very specific. Yep. Mm-hmm. And of course, the beard trimmer now, the nose trimmer, the testicular trimmer. You're not trimming the actual testicle. You're trimming the sac of the testicles, just to be clear. You can go to manscaped.com, put in We Say Things 20 for your promo code to get 20% off and free shipping. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon. Thank you, Manscaped. I think whoever is doing these... whoever's writing these texts has a New Year resolution to be more serious.
Yeah.
This was one of the less jokey ones.
That's right.
Overall. Maybe they just ran out of steam at the end of the year, and then they're going to kick off 2024 with an absolute banger. Who knows?
Yeah, it should be good. We're also sponsored by Relic Arena, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Only roughly 5 to 6 days left for that. So check it out. Also, thank you to our beautiful patrons from the In Bruges tier. I'll let you go first.
Suns fan makes fun of Sindarin's name, but it actually means Arrow of Thor and is pretty cool. We covered this one last week.
If I call you Arrow of Thor during cast, do you think people would appreciate that?
Literally nobody would understand. It's like, This guy's having a stroke. Great.
No, I get a lot of those during my cast anyway, so might as well add another to the list.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe they'll just brush it off, you know, and just be, oh, yeah, classic Suns fan.
Exactly.
Humbled bookmaker recommends Cocoon. How does this affect your Toro's legacy? Mister, I love the NBA segment. As Suns fan promised today will be the best episode ever. Sorry, I need to read it out correctly. Pepperballs, T-Coil, Q-Ludes is ready to praise the podcast. Stupid co-pilot secretly plotting to destroy Frostivus chest keys. Lab Dota, Yatoro does it again, Sindarin. MagDev, Dota 2 has had millions of users over its lifetime through basically only word of mouth. Disco Farm D and the Mega Pope.
Thank you also to Zan Xavier, Nate Thicko 01 Hamscrouts, Yatoro does it again, Sindarin. Shark TM, Janie, Dop. Nothing to see here. Eve Remort. Ben Broomhead has run out of food. He is now hunting the rats in the Climate Pledge Arena. Wooden Aftertaste. Anonymous. And archaeologists found a 14,000-year-old grave with a human and dog buried together. Mr. Niebling. That's very cute. I hope to be buried with my cats.
Now, here's the thing. If that's a 14,000-year-old grave, humans were a lot less developed 14,000 years ago. Who do you think was the pet?
That's true, Sindarin. Were we the pets and dogs were running the show?
The dogs could have dug a grave, and they might have devolved over time. Maybe, you know, dogs are really smart. 14,
considering 000. How long ago were they could have been mates, even.
Okay. Happy New Year, everyone. Let's go to the NBA
everybody
segment
was
everybody
thinking
cannot
it.
Cannot wait to hear after this.
Everybody was thinking it, all right? Yeah, but let's go to the NBA segment. Like you said, there's three bullet points because a lot has happened over the course of however many weeks it's been since I last discussed the NBA. Number one, Draymond Green, who's the guy that everybody hates on the Golden State Warriors. He always gets into kerfuffles with people. He's had an incident where he has stomped on somebody's chest in the middle of a fucking game in the playoffs and was only suspended like a game for some reason. He's always doing dirty plays, and it's gotten a lot worse this year, and it culminated with he did, what did he do? He put somebody in a chokehold. You remember that from earlier in the year, and he got suspended like however many games, five games, whatever the hell it was. And then the first couple weeks he was back, he played against us. And he basically punched one of our players in the fucking face. You can go look at the clip. His name is Yusuf Nurkic. You want to look at that clip versus Draymond Green. Almost knocked him out cold. So since then, he has been suspended indefinitely, which I think is going to end up being 10 to 15 games. He's being forced to take a bunch of classes and all that bullshit. He's crazy. He's a crazy motherfucker.
Sounds like he just has complete anger management issues.
Yeah. He does. I mean, people have always hated him. So nothing new, I guess. Second thing, Cinderin, the Detroit Pistons, who are coached by the Suns' last coach, so the coach we had for the last few years until this year, he was fired in the offseason, which we discussed, which I know you remember because you always listen to everything I say. He was not going to coach this year. He was going to take the year off to reflect and just recharge his batteries. But the Detroit Pistons, who are one of the worst teams in the league, offered him one of the biggest contracts in NBA history, okay? Keep in mind, he was coach of the year a couple of years ago with us. He's now coaching the Detroit Pistons.
Oh.
They start, so he's like top three net worth now with in terms of his contract, and it's like a 5-6 year contract or whatever. They started the season 2-1. They are now 2-28. They have lost 27 straight games, which is an NBA record now, so will forever be one of the things on his resume, and it's not looking good, I have to say. The sad thing is they're only two games away from going up a rank because there's a couple other teams that are really bad, but 27 in a row is something we've
never
seen.
I didn't know Bate went into basketball. That's awesome.
That's right. That's actually very mean. Jesus. And then the final part of the NBA segment is the Phoenix Suns, of course, since I am, in fact, a Suns fan, believe it or not. Remember when I said that we had a big three happening? Yeah. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and then Bradley Beal. So off and on, they've all three been injured. And Bradley Beal has been the one that's been injured the most. He had a back injury to start. They finally got on the court together for one game. We lost.
And then they lost.
We did lose.
Yes, I knew it. I fucking knew it.
And then the following game, Bradley Beal rolled his ankle in the first 4 minutes, so he is now out for several weeks. No, we've been losing like crazy. Oh. The Suns fucking suck ass right now. It is embarrassing to watch. They're not even when they're winning, it's not fun to watch. It's just, it's a shit show. Hopefully they can get their shit together, but we'll see. You know, it's the Suns after all, so it always ends in disappointment. So yeah, that's the NBA segment.
Are you slated to make the playoffs as it stands right now? What's your score?
As of right now, no, but we'll get better. We're like 15-15, so it's like complete garbage scoreline. We're like 10th or 11th, so we could make the play-in maybe. But
how high is it you need to place? Is it top 8?
I mean, top 6 guarantees playoffs, and then 7 through 10 plays in the play-in series.
Okay, so even 10th is a chance. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so many more games to go. And the Western Conference is ridiculously tough. So, like, if we went on, like, if we gained 3 games, we'd be, like, top 4, just to give you an idea of how crazy the West is. But so far, we fucking suck. All right. First Dota segment. ESL won Kuala Lumpur, which you attended, Cinder, and we wanted to talk about last week, but just had so many other things to discuss. Would you like to take us through this tournament and how it went?
Yes. I will take you through from the beginning, which is before I arrived. Because Shannon, this was one of my worst trips ever.
Was it?
Yeah, not that the event itself was fine. We were taken care of just fine by ESL. There was no problems there. But the travel surrounding it was very unfortunate for me. So I'm not going to beat your record. I think you've talked about your worst flight ever where you got like delayed by 2.5 or something days and you were in the airport forever. I can't beat that one, but this was still pretty bad. So I was meant to take off. And then on the day of leaving, I get an email like 5 or so hours before takeoff. Your flight today is canceled. And then, okay. I get rebooked to the same connection 24 hours later.
Not to interrupt. Did they say what the issue was with the plane?
I don't think they did directly say it, but I think it was based... There was a lot of trouble in Amsterdam at the time. Tons of flights got delayed. I think it might have had something to do with fog and shit, but I don't know why my flight got completely canceled for that. I think it could have maybe left delayed or whatever, but it got canceled. Okay. I guess they were just overburdened and had to cancel flights to even keep things operational. So fine. I'll leave 24 hours later. It's not that big of a deal. I get told when I'm at home. So I didn't even go to the airport. So I didn't waste any time really. I was just going to arrive a day later and not have as much time to adjust to the time zone. Okay. 24 hours later, I go and leave from the airport. My flight is about 1.5 hours delayed, which isn't that much, but it was delayed enough that I couldn't make the connection in Amsterdam because that one, for some reason, that fucking flight was on time. So I spend the night in Amsterdam. I get booked to a flight 24 hours later because that's the next one. Yeah. It's one a day. So then I fly. So I arrive in Malaysia 48 hours late. I missed day one of work where I got covered for by, I believe it was Kezu, and then Odie Pixel did a panel. Was great. Everybody loved that. You love paneling too.
Yep, it's great.
And then the event went smooth and everything was fine. And then a day before flying home, I start feeling something in my throat. I get sick the day I'm supposed to leave. My flight is at around midnight. I was planning to have lunch with some of the others. I wake up for that lunch and I'm like, okay, I feel miserable. I'm not going out of my room. So then I just tell them, have a good time. I stay in my room. I sleep until about 5 in the afternoon. And we have checkout at 6. That's the late checkout. Damn, so then I have to get up and pack my shit. Yeah, it's late. And then we go to the airport. I'm not feeling that great. But I was flying on the same flight as Odie and Shiver. So they were keeping me company in the airport. And having a conversation and just doing something is a nice distraction from feeling bad. So, but then that flight is 13 hours because you're flying west.
Mm-hmm.
From Malaysia to Amsterdam, then I have a 2-hour layover there, and then I fly home, and then I drive home. So that was flying while you're sick. You've done it before, right? It sucks.
Oh, yeah.
It really sucks. The two landings were, like, obliterating my head. I had such a bad headache landing. It was ridiculous.
Your trip sounds actually similar to my worst trip, which was China. But the difference is you at least got to stay home for that first delay. I had to be in China in a random shitty hotel.
Exactly.
That's basically the difference, I guess.
This would have absolutely taken the cake for me as my worst trip ever if I had already gone and had to stay somewhere for an extra day, right? Then that would have been... That was the redeeming thing about the whole thing. All right. The tournament itself. Let's talk about the teams and shit. It was a pretty competitive tournament. There were a couple of teams that flat out just didn't make the cut in groups. Nine Pandas and it was the only SA team, actually, Wawita Sagazas, which might not sound familiar, but some of their players probably do. It's Lumiere, Dark Mago, Oscar, Knight, and Panda, which has since, there's some new roster announcement stuff with some of those players. They got 1-9 in their respective groups, so they got obliterated. Fifth place in each group was Blacklist and LGD Gaming, and this was a 12-team tournament. So 8 teams advanced, 2 in the lower and 2 in the upper in each group. And this was a tournament where the Chinese teams were doing really well. Top of one group was Azure Ray, which surprised a lot of people. And top of the other group was G2IG, which we've talked about in the podcast that this team is very promising on paper with their players. Both teams went 8-2 in their groups, beating out names like Gaming Gladiators and Falcons and Liquid. In those groups, BetBoom. And then we get to the playoffs. And let's try to do a TLDR of this so it doesn't take too long. Effectively, the top four is Azure Ray, Gaming Gladiators, Liquid, and BetBoom. So G2IG, despite leading their group, don't even make the top four. They lost in upper round one, and then they lost after getting knocked down to lower. So they got 2-1 by Gaiman, and then 2-0 by BetBoom. BetBoom then in turn got 2-0 by Liquid. And then in the upper finals, Azure Ray got pretty much just trashed by Gaming Gladiators 2-0. They dropped down, faced Liquid in a pretty exciting series where they win. So for the first time in a very long time, it feels like we have a Chinese team in the finals. And then in that finals, they're playing against Gaming Gladiators, who just run them over in two games. And everyone is like, oh boy, this is the perfect end to the year. Gaming Gladiators can't fucking lose, can they? And then they get reverse swept by Azure Ray, which was quite incredible to see. Also, the fashion in which they did it, they really just powered up.
And none of the games were that long. The longest game was 39 minutes.
Yeah. Especially the first two games, the games Gladiators won were absolute beatdowns. The other ones were a bit more competitive. But yeah, Azure Ray, for the most part, just really had stuff figured out. And I should put an asterisk on this tournament, which, you know, will influence teams differently. I think it was the day of the playoffs or the day before, 735 dropped.
Mm.
So Valve were like, Merry Christmas, everyone. Good luck. And some teams probably adjusted better to that than others. One of the things that was really cool to see about Azure in particular was that they were playing a lot of different heroes. They just had a lot of creativity. They just wanted to run some stuff. They did it. They picked a ton of different heroes and overall like pacing and strategies and itemization and stuff. So that was really cool. And they did so. This is the first time in a very long time that a Chinese team has won a big international tournament. And of course, after winning this tournament, the players are thrilled, and some of them will be leaving the team. So we'll get to that. But well done. That was a cool story.
Did you predict a Chinese team to win this tournament, Sindarin?
I don't think we predicted anything, did we?
But you wouldn't have, correct?
I think after the groups, maybe I said on panel that I thought the favorite of the tournament was G2IG, but not Azure Ray, I think.
But before the tournament, you would not have. Oh, the point I'm trying to make.
I see what you're getting at.
Good.
Here.
Yes. ChatGPT. Yeah.
I always predict
fast.
China to win, and when I don't officially do it, they will win.
That's right.
So you're saying every tournament in the last year and a half, I've predicted a Chinese
victory. That's right. You love LGD. You're
they
a fanboy.
Out of groups, man. Oh, wow.
Okay, so that was ESL 1 Kuala Lumpur. How did you like... Yep. Have you been to Malaysia before?
I have. This was my second time there. I've been to Kuala Lumpur and then Genting.
How'd you like it?
That was in one trip. Because the group coverage was out of Kuala Lumpur and then we traveled to Genting. I think my favorite part of Malaysia is the food culture. Like, the food that is offered there, the whole... You can go out and eat in the streets at midnight. Because... Mm. Places are just open.
That sounds awesome.
And yeah, there's a big variety of stuff. One of the best things in Malaysia for me, which it's funny because when you talk to locals of any country about something that really stands out to you, to them, it's just normal, right? But the fruit juice in Malaysia is fucking incredible.
Mm, really?
And to them, it's just like, oh, well, yeah, it's good. We have it all the time. So he's like, I cannot get pineapple juice like this in Denmark. It's just not possible because, you know, they just... The fruit hasn't traveled, right? So it's just the level of freshness and the flavors are just so good. And they have a wide selection of juices that you don't generally get. So, you know, like you would get pineapple juice, watermelon juice, kiwi juice, and all of it's just fucking, literally all of it is just S tier. It's just that good. And it's dirt cheap as well for what you get. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of the food there as well. Very nice. I do like quite a lot of Asian-inspired food, and it's quite different. Some of the things they have. I also want to give a shout-out to the worst dessert I've ever had in my life, which is Malaysian, but I didn't have it this time. It's called ABC, and it's disgusting. Look it up. All right.
Are you going to explain? I think I've heard of it.
I might have told you about this dessert. Okay, so, all right, fine, I'll explain. I guess we have time for this. So there's something called shaved ice, and essentially it's like... You basically have like crystallized It's like crystallized icy flakes that are a little bit sweet, which is fine. You know, they're not like that flavorful. It's kind of just like water, just with a little bit of taste or whatever. And you have those ice shavings. And then you kind of make it, you make this dessert with, where you put that shaved ice together with certain sweet elements. And then for some fucking reason, they put corn and beans. corn and beans.
What kind of beans?
Black beans.
Black beans, huh?
I think it was black beans. I mean, like I said, I didn't have it this time. Because when I see it on the menu, I just laugh and tell this story every time. I'm like, this was disgusting. And there's like these pastes. So it's like, how to explain it? It's like this gooey paste that would be like green or red. And they're like somewhat Swedishly flavored or whatever. But it's the combination that just makes zero sense. I'm like... You know me, I feel like I will always finish my dessert. And I don't remember if it was winter or something that said I had to try it when I was there the last time. And I don't know if it was like half as a joke or whatever. I ate like a quarter of it. And I was like, does anyone else want some? Couldn't fucking do it, man.
That's crazy. It was bad. People are saying it's red beans, not black
beans. Red beans. All right.
I was gonna say, black beans is very like a Mexican thing. So I was surprised to hear that.
Changes everything.
Yeah, true. Doesn't matter.
I don't know, man. Supposedly, so I talked to Winter about it this time. He was like, you got a bad ABC. They can be really good. Oh, you got the bad variant or whatever. Well, okay. I don't know. Like, maybe there's good ones, but that one didn't make me want to order it ever again. So, but most of the stuff there was very good. And especially, I went back to, a couple of different places. You remember 343, Adam?
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to a Middle Eastern themed restaurant, actually, which was nice, and had some, what was it? We had falafel and some kebab. I had some kebabs in tomato sauce, which was very nice. And with Winter, I went to a Chinese Malaysian restaurant, which we've been to once before. And some of the things I had there was salted egg.
You love your salted egg. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, salted egg. I had stingray again, which is really nice. Very special fish. And some other fried foods. And then we also went to apparently this specialty place that only had like, it only served like five dishes or something, which were some pork, what was it? Pork belly in a broth. And then they had I think it was beef belly, the other one maybe. And some really nice fried greens. And yeah, just nice, you know, nice good local stuff. That was cool to have. So it was a good time. And that was all the quote unquote tourism I did. Because usually at these events, as you know, we don't really go out for anything else than food for the most part.
Plus you missed the first day, which is usually the day that you do stuff anyway.
I basically arrived and then the next day I was working. I was lucky to... For the most part, I actually dodged jet lag while flying east. It was a very solid transition, which is pretty rare. So that was lucky. Otherwise, I could have been miserable for 2 days while working. But it was all right. So that was fortunate.
Good stuff. All right, let's move on to roster shuffle. I'm probably missing a few teams here, Senator, but we'll start with... I don't know why I linked a video.
Sometimes G2IG made this like really elaborate announcement video that was 3 minutes long.
Let me open... Wow, I put a lot of useless links in this outline this time. All right, let me just type in
I can
G2.
Tell you the roster if you want.
All right, I got it. G2.IG was officially announced, and you got to cast some of them. Monet, Nothing to Say, JT, Boboka, and X Nova. Yep. I mean, you talked about them briefly, but do you think this lineup has a good chance to be the best Chinese team long term, especially with Azure Ray now changing lineups randomly?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of funny, right? I definitely think so. I also thought they were going to be the best Chinese team this tournament, which they ended up not being. But I think overall this was a fairly good first showing. You know, they beat their group and then they faced some really strong opponents. They ran into Game in round one upper and they lost 2-1. I think the lowers was the more disappointing one. The way they lost to BetBoom was not particularly inspiring, but, you know, new patch, new strats, stuff they ran probably didn't work as well as they had hoped, and maybe they lost a bit of their momentum, but they were fun to watch. And JT was awesome on camera. It's really cool. He was just laughing a lot. He gave some great entertainment value to the stream, gave a good interview. So he made some fans for sure that event. as one of the home players. I guess now that we've said that, let's do Azure Ray next, because this is where it's quite interesting, right? So Azure Ray are losing. So three of the players on Azure Ray that just won the LAN were XM, XXS, and Jinkyu. Who for me was probably the tournament MVP, by the way. Jinkyu was playing like an absolute god this event. Those three players will be going to Extreme Gaming. So yeah, three of the champions are going to Extreme Gaming, and they will be teaming up with Ame, who's returning, and DY, which will be playing position five instead of the five that the three of them just played with, which was Qianmeng. This is a roster that's really promising. I mean, obviously, we just have three recent champions. Ame is back, who's considered one of the best carries of all time. And DY has been playing for a lot of big teams as a position five and got some really good major placements. So on paper, this could be a better team than the one that just won the LAN. But it's not always how
it
goes.
You don't mess with chemistry, Sindarin. You don't mess with that shit.
It's not always the best on paper that's the best.
I would say more often than not, it's not the case.
Yeah, I would agree with that. On Azure Ray, FY has announced that he's coming back, so he will play for Azure Ray. And he also said that the new position three for Azure Ray is Nowitzki, who is apparently a legendary German basketball player, which people are inferring that this is obviously going to be Faith Bion,
right?
Because he is living with his wife in Germany.
By the way, it's an NBA player.
There's been rumors of him.
You're bringing the NBA segment into the middle of Dota now. His name was Dirk Nowitzki, played for the Dallas Mavericks. Very good player.
I guess now FY is your favorite player because he announced it that way then.
If it turns out to be Faith Bion, then yes. I mean, I love FY anyway.
If it turns out to be Nowitzki, I'm fucking in.
If it's Dirk Nowitzki, yeah. I mean, he'd be really bad and the team's going to be terrible, but I'd still be into that. So yeah, a lot of these Chinese teams mixing it up and should be really interesting to see how that pans out. Long term. Mm-hmm. Also, Nigma have made some announcements. And of course, we talked about a few of them in the last episode briefly, but Miracle, Sumail, and Kuroki are the three confirmed for them right now. So missing a position three and a position four. Who was rumored? Somebody was rumored.
God, it's eluding me right now.
Chat, help us out here.
There was a rumor for a four. I mean, there's a lot of rumors, so
Ramses,
I don't really know which one you want to put most.
I think Ramses was one of them. Basically, players that need to be bought out of current. No, it was from BetBoom. Pure was
Pure,
the big one.
Pure was a rumor. I think Ramses was also mentioned, though. Some people were theorizing Soxa was going to play for them, which I feel like is just a complete random shot in the dark. I mean, for me, most of these are very unconfirmed. I don't know. They might turn out to be right.
Many big players available, if you think about it, right?
Yeah, but it's also Nigma doesn't necessarily need to take established big players. They have a core of very seasoned veterans that are very skilled, and then that's where you a lot of the time benefit from bringing in new talent, right? Surprised they let go of all of their other players. I don't know what the mindset was behind it. Obviously, Mind Control left, I believe.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. Mind Control left, Yuma left, and GH, I think, is taking a break, if I'm not mistaken.
Mikey left as well, or was kicked. I don't know which one it was.
Mikey, yeah. So. Yeah, they have yet to fill out a roster, taking their sweet-ass time, it seems. Alliance officially drops their Dota team. Felt like a long time coming, honestly.
Yeah. Based on the text that they wrote, I think this could be, if I remember it correctly at this point, I think the players will probably still play together. At least most of them will still play together. So it might have been a matter of the contract running out and the players not being interested in re-signing or Alliance not being interested in re-signing. But the thing that Alliance made clear in their announcement was that they want to still do Dota, but they're not doing it right now. So it's a break. It's not, we are done with this game kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see what they cook up in the next year. And finally, Tundra has picked up Team Undying. So that was the old TSM.
Minus Ahri.
Is now Tundra. Yeah, minus Ahri plus Immersion. And they played in Kuala Lumpur, where they got, I think they got 7th, 8th. Am I remember this correctly? Yes, they got 7th, 8th. Together with Team Secret.
All right. Well, those are the roster shuffles as of today. Next, very brief topic, which again was announced a bit ago, but ESL has announced that an ESL 1 will be coming April 2024, which I think we already had dates for, but it will be in Birmingham, which is really cool. United Kingdom action, Sindarin. Your famous photo, am I? No, that's maybe that's in Frankfurt. You have your photo used for everything. It was an ESL 1 in a big stadium. Was that Germany?
The one where I have a headset on and I'm sitting at the desk or whatever? That's from ESL Frankfurt.
Frankfurt, okay. Have you been to Birmingham, any event?
I have not, actually. I've never done a Dota event in the UK, so I hope I get to be a part of this one. It sounds like fun and it's close to home, obviously, so that's nice. Mm. And yeah, this would be the first time. I think the the last Birmingham, I wasn't invited as talent. But Susie went. She was a judge. Excuse me. She was a judge for the cosplay contest.
Oh.
So she went.
You didn't go to support her, Sindarin?
Go judge. I mean,
it's not that hard of a fly for you.
No, if she wanted me to come, and especially if she was competing, I would have definitely gone. But I think that was just her thing, which is fine. I go to plenty of events in Europe that she isn't at either, so we don't have to be at everything. But yeah, this will potentially be really cool. I think the last Birmingham was it was before COVID, right? I think it might have been 2019. Oh,
it's been a hot minute, yeah. I mean, I've never been to Birmingham before. I've never been to an event in UK.
That was one. Yeah. And that one was won by Team Secret against Evil Geniuses. Oh, how time flies.
Which Team Secret was that? Was that the...
That might have been the...
Was that the puppy Team Secret, Cinder?
This was probably the dominant one that won everything that year, right?
Yeah, so the
no-tail. No, it actually wasn't. It was Nisha, Midone, Zai, Yapzor, and Puppy. Was that the one that won everything and then TI got canceled? Was that year? I feel like it wasn't the exact one, but maybe I'm wrong. Oh, they started in lower bracket and won the tournament. Damn. All
right, well, hopefully they make it again. So that's going to be for $1 million. This next topic you put on the list, so you can give us a little rundown.
I thought this was an interesting conversation, and it's also kind of funny what sparked this. So this is a tweet from Celery, the captain and position 5 of Gaming Gladiators, who tweeted on December 21st, so a week ago, "I wonder why there are usually no trophies for teams that get second/third place at tournaments. I sometimes get in conversation about it with family. They always feel like it's odd. In Dota, the final three teams usually play on the final day. Seems appropriate to award them all." And then as a follow-up tweet, "Just a small trophy could be cool, in my opinion, gives the organizations that win them more to share about as well. I was lucky to usually get first. Just seems odd that Liquid, for example, has zero trophies this year."
I didn't see that
I don't see any downsides, to be honest. Do let me know your thoughts. Okay, so first of all, Celery is a really good dude. He seems very wholesome. This is fucking funny, the way this is written. Is like, it seems so much like
if it was
so much
anybody
like
else, it would be, that would be a dig. For sure.
Yeah, it you know, if you know the other teams, you'd be like, okay, man, come on, dude. They got second like 10 times there. Give them a fucking break. But I think it was an interesting conversation, to be honest. And I guess he wouldn't have tweeted this if they won. The timing of this is obviously kind of funny because they got second place. He didn't tweet it after TI, though. He could have done it then. But yeah, they got second to Azure. And I remember having this conversation with Moxie back at some Dream League, I think, where she was like, wouldn't it be nice if the players got some sort of top three podium conclusion to the tournament? And that got me thinking, yeah, why not, right? Like, You can have the big trophy for the winners, and then there can be silver and bronze medals or whatever. All of the teams are there on the last day anyway, since they're playing, which is guaranteed. Every Dota tournament has top three playing on the last day. So they're already there. There's no real downside for them in terms of logistics or whatever. I mean, sure, they have to stay around and watch the finals, but then they also get celebrated, right? Mm. And they get a trophy to bring home and a memory. And for the organizational standpoint, from the organizer's side, the cost of this is absolutely minimal. Of having some medallions made or whatever. I mean, for God's sake, we as casters get these participation coins to commemorate that we cast the event, right?
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Do you never get a goodie bag? Do they not give you a goodie bag, but every other caster? That would be kind of funny,
the
actually.
The goodie bag is what you're referencing?
In the goodie bag, you get this, like, box, and then when you open it, there's like a coin for the tournament. You know what I mean, right?
I've gotten one of those, maybe. I don't keep that shit.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. You can choose not to keep those. I'm just saying there is some sort of, for us,
made it seem like it was like this special little thing that they hand deliver to you on a silver platter, just in a fucking goodie bag. Who cares?
Yeah, but I just, okay, well,
it's a bunch of garbage in there usually.
Okay, well, there was nice stuff this time. That's why you weren't there, or that's because you weren't there.
Yeah, probably.
They really stepped it up because they were like, oh, Shannon finally isn't here. Now we're going to make the coin solid gold.
They'll know that I complain no matter what. So it's like, if it's too nice, it's like, this is too heavy. Oh, please. It's
You're never going to be happy.
Yeah,
sadly. But I think it's an interesting conversation. I mean, why not? Wouldn't it be nice to have some sort of a prize ceremony with top three? I think it would be nice. I don't really think there's any major downsides. Okay. And I think Dota is very much a game where we, I think, don't celebrate the accomplishment of getting top three enough with how hard it is. The field is exceptionally hard. It's fine, you always talk most about the champions, that's how it should be. But I feel like a lot of the time people forget who got third. Right? Like, it's just not... That
right,
is also
Sindarin,
a major accomplishment.
There's two sides to this. Okay. So I'll start with the side that you're on. Conceptually... Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. It does make sense to have a first, second, third something for the org to show. Then there's the realist. Do you know how much these fucking players make? Who gives a shit, Sindarin?
How is that an argument?
I recently found out how much some of these players are making, and it makes me want to vomit in my fucking mouth. Who cares? Just play. Get your money. Enjoy life. You could fucking retire already in your mid-20s, for God's sake. Fuck off! I love Celery, though. This is not directed to him. He's very... He's a very nice young lad, but seriously, they make way too much money. Just... Right. It's fine, as is.
A lot of the time, I'm willing to entertain your arguments that don't make sense to me. This is literal bullshit. It's not even an argument.
What do you mean literal bullshit?
These guys should not get a third place medal because they're rich.
No. I didn't say they shouldn't. I said conceptually it makes sense, but... Personally, I don't care because they make so much money.
That's
what I'm saying.
You don't care is fine, but you made it sound like a good argument for not giving a medal to second and third place is that these are successful, rich people.
I don't like people that are rich and young. All right? It's not fair. Dude,
that is the worst argument you've made on the podcast, and that says something. That's pretty funny.
I've had some worse ones. Definitely. Tell us in the comments which one's my worst
one. Okay, maybe I should be careful making absolute statements like that, but it's definitely up there.
Conceptually, I agree. I don't care.
I mean, that's fine. I think a lot of people don't care, but I think a lot of people would also think it's nice, and especially the whole org perspective, I think, is kind of interesting of having... Because there's a lot of orgs that have had a lot of great placements, but there's nothing to commemorate it in Dota except winning. And that, to me, is a little bit weird. You know, for example, in the Olympics... Getting a bronze medal or a silver medal is something that there's a lot of pride in and something that is tracked. One of the things that people keep track of in the Olympics is the medals race. So how many of this and that medal has a country won? And that is a measurement of success. But if you only looked at first places, some of the countries that might be scoring in the top 10 of average medals might be not even showing, you know, because they just got a lot of seconds and thirds. And that's still... a massive accomplishment, right? This is a global game, and the level of play is exceptionally high. So I personally think it would be cool to have this second, third place stuff celebrated too. thought it was an interesting
take. It is interesting. Anyway. Yeah, it's something I literally never thought of. So. And never will again. So, next topic.
I guess, do other esports have this? I guess that's my final question.
I haven't seen one.
I feel like I've seen tournaments in the past with like StarCraft and shit, where there was like a podium presentation.
See, that makes a lot more sense because it's individual, right?
Because it's a single player game. Do you think that's an important thing for this?
And like, I think of tennis as well, right? I mean, I know this is not...
That's not an esport.
Well, if you do it in PlayStation, you get a medal.
Okay.
If you're a FIFA All-Star...
Wow,
That's not single. That's a team game as well. I don't know. I think I feel like maybe now that you bring that up, I remember this maybe happening like way back in the day before things were more standardized. I have not noticed anything in the last 10 years that's done anything like that, but I'm sure there's something.
I think, in fairness, in Dota, I forgot what they're called. Was it the Asian Games that happened this year or whatever, where there was like national teams? You remember China had this super team. I think they won. I don't remember exactly, but I believe that one had a prize ceremony with medals, and that might have been because it was countries participating. So that's like a genre thing where, okay, when it's a national tournament, then we have medals because it's a bit, you know, World Cup or Olympics like or whatever. But I don't think it should be limited to only being country type tournaments that should have medals. Just because the international tournaments obviously have mixed teams. Yeah. That's, I don't think that makes a difference. Okay.
All right. Next topic. And then after this one, we're going to do our New Year's stuff, which should be fun. Relic Arena. This is the, let me see if this actually works. Hold on. Let me bring up the screen.
This is the one, you know, it's a Suns fan game.
Okay.
Relic Arena. Let's see if this works.
There we go. Our webcams are a bit scuffed because I got a new webcam. Not going to fix it though. So let me come back to the main page. So there's only 6 days to go for the Kickstarter of Relic Arena. So by next podcast, it will be donezo. So please contribute if you can. We appreciate it. The latest stretch goal has been achieved, which is the spectating feature for 45K. I don't believe that was done quite yet in the last podcast. Pretty sure.
That is correct, I think.
The next one for 50K is weather effects. So we'll add that as a cosmetic in our game. And then anybody that backs it, even if it's the lowest tier, will receive the Aurora Borealis effect, Sindarin. That could be you.
It could.
Also, with social goals, we have achieved quite a bit now. Let me scroll all the way to the bottom. These are the ones where if you back the project or wish list on Steam or join our Discord or our subreddit or follow any of our individual accounts, it contributes points to the total pool and unlocks different things. So this was a double whammy. In fact, I can just go to the update page.
Oh, you're almost through them. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, those ones have been pretty juicy. So double whammy, as it says here, Twitch extension support. So when the game comes out, you'll be able to highlight the stream and see everything like you can with Dota. And we have another vote for a leader. So, and this one's available to everyone. So if you just go to the Kickstarter and click on the link that is here, you can rank the 5 leaders that we're going to go over right now and choose which one you like the most. And the top 2 will be guaranteed to get into the game. So the first one is Miyamoto Musashi from Japan, a legendary swordsman, Cinder, and philosopher, and strategist. Very cool. Montezuma II, one of the Aztec emperor, actually the final emperor of the Aztec Empire. I've always been very fascinated with that culture. Simon Bolivar from Venezuela. I think a lot of South Americans will recognize this name. He's considered, it was actually tough to pick a South American, like narrow it down, but this one seemed like a good choice because it encompasses so many different countries. But he was a military and political leader during the late 1780s and early 1800s. Sun Tzu from China. Don't really need
Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu. Vlad the Impaler, a.k.a. Dracula from Romania. And then my boy Xerxes.
Oh, yeah. Xerxes.
From the Persian Empire. So when you click, the poll comes up just like this. It's going to be in a random order, and you just order them the way that you want, with the highest points being at the top. And then you vote. And then in 3 days it ends, and those top two will get into the game.
And then Sun Tzu wins.
We'll see.
Let's go.
You may be surprised. I mean, I thought the bear was going to win in the last vote, and he got second. So.
Oh, I'm not saying for sure it'll win. It's just a call to arms, you know? You guys better vote for Sun Tzu.
Okay. There you go. We'll see. Yep. All right. Thank you for listening again. And I think once the Kickstarter's over, not every week, but occasionally I'll update you guys on like progress of the game and whatnot. I won't get too specific probably. I don't know. Depends on how I feel. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff is going to be like there's Kickstarter rewards, like the early ones where Jenkins and I will do like behind the scenes content and private streams where we do Q&As and stuff like that. So it feels like it doesn't make sense to really do that much on the podcast, but yeah. Okay.
You're still on track for the alpha to be in March, was it?
Who knows, Sindarin.
Okay, well that's the plan officially,
yeah.
I believe. Still? Okay.
So it's
most people will obviously be interested in is when they get to see the game, right?
Yeah, there's too many moving parts, so it's impossible to know. But
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hopefully by March is the alpha, and then hopefully by September is the beta.
Okay.
Okay, and then final topic of this evening / day is New Year's stuff. So I thought it would be good if we could do this every year.
Okay.
Where we make a best and worst of year categories. Okay.
Time to make some enemies. You're good at that.
There's one where we're only going to do the best of because it's going to be too awkward probably.
Which one is that? Could that be team of the year?
Player. No, we're doing team.
Oh.
Team is a collection of players. They can take the blame equally, but individuals, okay. You're calling them out, right?
All right.
So here's the thing that I kind of want to do stuff outside of Dota, but obviously we need to do some stuff for Dota. So the first couple will be Dota related, which is best team of the year. And we'll just alternate here. I think we probably agree on this one. What do you think?
I just want to know, when it comes to worst, what are the conditions for being worst? Is it having bad results or underperforming relative to the potential that your
latter
and your players has? Okay, so underperforming potential wise. Okay, best team of the year, Gaming Gladiators in Dota, I think. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you would agree with that. It's between them and Spirit, obviously, and then it depends.
Yeah, runner up is Spirit, but it's hard to argue against Gaiman. I know they didn't win the two biggest tournaments, but basically everything else. Like
more or less.
I feel like it's the most consistent year run any team's ever had in Dota. But, I mean, would I rather be Spirit? Yes. I mean, you won Riyadh and TI, so yes. But I think it's more impressive what Gaiman did, personally.
Yeah.
Okay, worst team of the year relative to where they should have been. Do you have...
I think, actually, as an asterisk to the one we just did, I think best team of the year is Gaiman Gladiators, but best individual performance was Spirit.
Okay.
I think...
The highest peak for a team?
Yeah, their peak was higher. Like the level of play when they played their best was the best. So it's not like Gaming Gladiators won a lot of the tournaments and Spirit couldn't have stood a chance or whatever. But when Spirit were playing at their very best, which I think was TI, I think they were better at TI than Riyadh.
So that's where it gets interesting because then it depends on people's criteria of what makes the team the best. It's the highest performance or is it the most consistent performance and relative to other teams? Because I think overall gaming was just better than every other team throughout the entire year in general.
I will always value consistently more than an individual performance in that regard. Because I think that's what's more impressive and what's harder to obtain is a high average throughout an entire season. A lot of teams can have a standout tournament where they just play really well and everything clicks, but doing it over and over and over again is very difficult in Dota when the patches change all the time and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and the other teams try to catch up to you, right? So,
worst team of the year in Dota was.
This is where it's tricky for me.
It is.
You said it's relative to.
Yeah.
Relative to the, let's say, the legacy of the name / potential of the roster, right? Yeah, well, you go first this time. You said we alternate.
Okay, sure. So, I can name a few teams. Like, I don't think Alliance would work because they haven't been very good for quite a while now.
The expectations were high.
Exactly.
Right?
So. And they lost their team now, but that's a pretty big punch to the gut, I would imagine. I think Secret could theoretically be up there because they didn't make TI, but it's like, I feel like they're definitely were worst performing team. Enigma, another one of those high expectations. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is just bias. I feel like for me, it's Shopify. They did well at that one tournament and they were honestly trash the whole year. And I feel like they had a very good roster on paper.
I guess it's one of those things where you look at a team like Enigma and you're like, these players are incredible, but it's just been so long since they had a good run or even a good year. So at that point, you're like, are they really underperforming that hard or is that just the new state of things? And obviously now they're revamping their entire roster more or less, right? I have a lot of respect for the players of that team and I think they're individually very skilled, but they just haven't been able to make it click for a long time. And they've really stuck through it thick and thin, for better or worse, in this case for worse, right? But I really admire their, I don't know if I'd call it stubbornness, but more like camaraderie, that they really hoped they could overcome their weaknesses and they just didn't. So yeah, obviously that was really disappointing, but I think relative to potential and what we had seen from them in recent times, I think Shopify was probably across those three the most disappointing because they were a team that could be a championship team or at least consistently top three with the players that they had, with what they had shown in prior years. This was probably the worst year for their team, right?
Yeah.
Secret was a little bit more of a mixed bag because, yeah, they did really well at that TI, but they also had some pretty significant roster changes that they didn't want, right? Where they lost Zai, they lost Matu, two of their star players. It was always going to be a harder year. Yeah. I don't know. I think your candidates are fair, though.
Yeah.
I think those are probably the ones worth mentioning.
Do you pick Shopify or are you picking something else?
Or it's a Chinese team.
Yeah.
Because there's also a lot of potential there. But again, then we're back to the Enigma argument where it's like, yeah, these players are really good, but when's the last time this region or these teams did so well that we can reliably expect them to play as high? So I think, yeah, I guess I'll put, if I have to pick one, it's probably Shopify then. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yep. Well, that's what my choice was.
Yeah, well, we just elaborated, right? But I think it's probably reasonable. And I think they themselves are obviously very disappointed, right? They knew they had the potential. That's why it sucks to have such a bad year, because they know they're good enough.
Yep.
It just didn't happen.
All right. Best. Okay. So this is just Dota still. Best event of the year. You were not at this event, and that's why it was the best. Riyadh Masters, I thought was the best event of the year. Yeah. Now, there's criteria here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's so fun about like tier lists and ranks and stuff like that is it's the eye of the beholder, right? everyone's criteria, even if it's just a little bit different, that's what makes things mm-hmm. interesting, but it also stirs up controversy. So this event had almost no like in-person viewers, right? Spectators. Right. That's not why I'm putting it. That's not part of my criteria. I want something that I thought was the most fun to be at. That's how I'm.
So effectively to be best event of the year, you need to have good, what's it called again? Your favorite food.
Shawarma.
Yeah. If you have good shawarma, I mean, you can get Suns Fan best event of the year.
It's not the only thing. Okay, so Riyadh, obviously, the biggest...
You almost said it. You almost fucking said it. You made it very clear. That was a key criteria on here.
I mean, for me, Riyadh was very special because I hadn't been back to the homeland, as it were, for many years. Mm-hmm. The shawarmas definitely play a big part because I've been thinking about them a lot, Sindar, and I'm not even kidding mm-hmm. you. It might be the best thing I've ever eaten in general.
Okay.
But it's also the highest prize pool event. The production was immaculate. The only real downside, other than, you know, the stuff that people, like the political stuff, obviously, mm-hmm. the only real downside was that the crowd was very small, and it felt like it was hard to even get a crowd there to begin with. But everything else was top notch. And even just like for talent and players that were in, like, I would say the venue, but it's like a fucking theme park. You can just do whatever you want all day long. Like, it was fucking legit.
Yeah. So I wasn't there.
I should have put that as a pro as well. My bad.
Yeah. I mean, you did. I think you said that's why it was the best event.
That's right.
I think for me, it's without a doubt TI. And I think it's hard to make the best event of the year one with that little of a crowd, because I think that really is a big part of the event is the. What's the word I'm looking for here? Fuck, it's eluding me. Anyway, the magnitude of it, the stories, the vibe, all of it. Because, like you said, it was a very big prize pool. But if you looked at what people talk about for the year, what people put the most stock in, what got the most discussion going, I still feel like the legacy of TI just completely destroyed that tournament for me. And also.
Well, did you watch Riyadh Masters?
It was also, how to say, it was a really good TI. I think that's the other thing, right? Because we've had, in terms of like overall production flow and everything, this TI was super cleanly run. This would have possibly, in the community's eyes, probably been the best TI of all time if the prize pool was 40 million. That's always going to be the asterisk at this TI. Well, it wasn't the biggest one, but the... It was a very well-run event.
In a 3-0?
And the venues were awesome. I thought they did a really good job with the smaller one this time. I thought the revamped Climate Pledge Arena was awesome. Mm. They just did a really good job, in my opinion. So I would pick that one.
Okay. So
but I think... Yeah.
It ended in a 3-0. That's... And you don't have control over that. I would say... And I thought TI was great, by the way. I'm not saying it was bad by any means. It was probably the second best event of the year. I think the games at Riyadh were, on average, way better than TI. Mm-hmm. They were. That's literally fair. The most entertaining Dota that I have ever cast.
Then I guess.
I thought it was amazing.
Then I guess the question is, what is it like? At that point, being the best event of the year is a little bit up to chance as well, right?
Yeah.
Because let's say you're a tournament organizer and you do everything right, but the games are just shit.
Mm.
Does that make it a bad event, or were you just unlucky that the meta was shit or that teams were stomping?
I think to be a great event, you need to check as many boxes as you can, and part of it comes down to luck with how good the games are, but you still have to have great production and all the extracurricular stuff.
Yeah, I would agree the downside to TI this year was that the finals wasn't particularly interesting, except game 3, but they still lost. If the finals was it was like a nail biter, would that have pushed you to this being the best, or was that still not have been enough?
I mean, mine is a lot of personal bias,
just
personal experience, right? I was also sick at TI, which is luck based.
That doesn't help. Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, even the finals for Riyadh was not. I think it was a 3-1. It wasn't. I was on the fucking plane. I scheduled my shit wrong, so I was on the plane during the grand finals anyway.
Right.
But leading up to those points, I thought the games on average were better. Worst event, Sindarin.
Do you have one in mind? I couldn't think of one here. I was like, this was clearly the worst.
I had
worst
two that tied.
Okay.
At Bali and Lima. They had major issues constantly.
True.
They had heat
actually,
issues.
Now that you say it, it's just a while ago, but definitely. Okay, for me, there's no doubt, actually.
Which one or both?
I think it has to be Lima, right?
Lima, okay.
Yeah, but I agree. Both of them were run way less good than they should be for being majors, but Lima had so many delays, right? It was absurd. And from what you heard in terms of like the way it was organized and the overall experience that people had and the quality of things, it sounded like
they definitely had a lot of sweating going on as well.
It was not up to the level that it was meant to be. And I think it's fair to cut some slack to tournament organizers that undertake such a challenging project without having perhaps the biggest experience of running something of that scale. But at the end of the day, you can cut them some slack, but even if you cut them some slack, it just wasn't good enough, right? Like that's just the truth of it. There was too many problems, too many delays, too many individual mistakes that just made things run poorly. correct me if I'm wrong, the crew that did Bali was completely different, right? In terms of like production. Not the talent, obviously. There's always going to be overlap, but it was not the same organizer.
Was it different?
The same organizer, you could argue Bali is worse because they had the first event to learn and then they still had so many mistakes. But I would say overall the first one was worse. I think the first one was ESB and the second was ePulse, right? I'm reading that in chat. That sounds right to me. I remember ePulse being Bali and the other one was someone else.
I remember ePulse being both.
Okay, Tsunami is writing in chat. We're going to trust Tsunami. He says Lima was ePulse and 4D and Bali was ePulse and IO.
That's right. So there was a slight difference.
So ePulse was a part of both. I think Tsunami was at both events. Let's get his take.
Tsunami, what was the worst event of the year?
Because that was at neither. So for me, it was just from an outside perspective.
That's true. That's true.
Were you at one of them?
No, no.
Wait, neither of us were.
No, we were invited to Lima, but we canceled like a couple weeks before because of the civil.
There were concerns about the tournament for multiple reasons, including
that's true. The
state of the country.
It wasn't just itself. Yeah, it was a combination.
It was definitely a kicker as well. There were, so again, I mean, it's, are we being too rough given the circumstances? I don't think so.
I still think
it's just not good enough, you know, but
yeah,
but I would like to think it's one of those things where, you know, given the scale, given the finances of everything and how it was, I think if they were to run something again, I would definitely expect a significant improvement because experience is king and stuff like this. But with that said, maybe Bali should have then gone a bit better than it did if ePulse was involved in both. But it's possible that ePulse is a partner and the other ones that are running it, whether that's IO or ESB, you know, who knows? It's hard to know who to point fingers at, but.
All right, next. And this is the one we will not be doing worst.
Okay, Tsunami just wrote, actually. Let's give him a...
Okay.
He says, I give Lima the advantage because it was more memorable than Bali. I work both, and I remember literally nothing about Bali's show. So does that mean, when you say you give it the advantage, that means Lima was better and therefore not worst? Or that Bali was better because you don't remember bad things?
I think he's saying Lima was better, so Bali
Lima was
the
better
worst.
Because it left a stronger impression. Okay.
For me, as a viewer, both were roughly just as bad.
Yeah.
I remember
the reason having a discussion is that it was quite
the
close.
Panel, like the way that it was set up, just looked very not perfect. Like when I say professional,
amateur-ish?
Obviously amateurish, sure. It looked, did not look good for either of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that talent had a lot of fun at both events because Lima was really cool. Try all the food and all that good stuff. And then Bali was a literal vacation spot and people were just chilling by the pool. So,
yeah.
But there were a ton of delays for both tournaments. And from a viewer perspective, I don't think it was very good.
And it's entirely possible that these were not, if we think across literally everything that happened this year, it's possible that these were not the worst run events, but the standard that we're holding them to is just way higher because it's a major.
Yep.
So it just has to, you know.
All right. Yep. Best player of the year in 2023 in video games. So, I mean, I have mine. You can go first if you want. I have a tie. That's kind of the issue. It's really hard to choose. I have one for Dota and then one for any other game. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
I think my best player of the year for Dota, if I had to pick one, is probably Ace.
Really?
From Gaming Gladiators.
Oh, I think okay.
I think he's been stable, absolute top tier performer for them, and a huge part of why they were consistent throughout the entire year. I think his base level, his worst game is really good. I think it's very hard to pinpoint games this year where you were like, all right, Ace just really fucked up this game and they lost, or he didn't carry his weight. A lot of the time he overperformed and just really, in my opinion, shined as an offlaner. So I would pick him. For any game, probably Zaiwu in CSGO.
CS2.
Yeah, CS2 now, but it was also CSGO this year, right?
True. Okay.
Probably.
Okay, so this is where criteria becomes fun because I can change my criteria now to be completely different than what it was. Your webcam is really freaking out, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did it actually freeze now?
It was freezing a bit, but
it's back now. Okay, we're good.
Yeah. I can change my criteria to be the opposite of what it was for best team of the year. I look at best player, I'm talking about peak performance.
Mm-hmm.
In Dota, for me, it's Yatoro. People are talking about him being potentially greatest of all time, which I think there's a lot more that goes into greatest of all time. So even with two TIs, I don't think it's that clear cut. But I think his peak performance is higher than any Dota player I've seen. But
I would agree with that. But then it's again about whether it's consistency versus best individual performance, right?
So for Dota, I would pick him.
Uh-huh.
And then for any other game, I'm also going to pick Zaiwu. And I wanted to... So I've been watching a lot more Counter-Strike now.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep in mind, like, obviously I played a lot of CS back in the day, very familiar with the game in general. And then CSGO came out and I really hated it compared to the past Counter-Strikes. So after playing for like a year or so, I just stopped watching, stopped playing for like 8-9 years. So this is like a huge gap. And obviously the scene has grown a lot since then. As of like a year ago, I didn't even know who Zaiwu was. I knew who Simple was. Everybody talks about him being greatest of all time. And I've watched him play, and he's obviously extremely good. But something happened watching Zaiwu at several tournaments now that has never happened to me. And this is going to sound really narcissistic, okay?
Okay.
I don't know if you do the same thing with Dota. Like, I know I'm fucking old, and I'm shit at Counter-Strike now, but I go back and like I have these feelings of grandeur, like these memories of how good I thought I was, okay? And how... You know, Simple made this shot. I could have done that. Maybe I'm not consistent like him, okay? But I could have made that shot in my prime. Is that a narcissistic thing to say? I'm not saying I could do it as often as him, but like a quick flick, I'm like, I could have actually done that during my best games.
Sure.
For Zaiwu, he's doing stuff I know for a fact I could never have done once. Like, the fact that he is this good with the op, with the assault rifle, so M4 or AK, and with fucking pistols, is absurd. I have never seen a player this good on my best day at my fucking top level, which, again, many years ago now, could not have hit any of these shots. He is the most impressive player I've ever seen in CS.
So
it's fucking incredible play.
To get a little more, because I think you're a better judge of this than I am. One of the comparisons I've read, because in the last like 3 years in CS, the discussion is always who's better between Simple and Zaiwu, right? And one of the comments I saw that I thought was kind of interesting was somebody said Zaiwu does all the fundamentals almost perfectly, and Simple's server impact is more in terms of like creativity, that he does crazy stuff, his playstyle is very unpredictable, whereas Zaiwu will just play by the book, but he will play it so well that you can't beat him by the book, you know what I mean? Do you feel like that's a fair assessment of those two players against each other, that that's the difference?
I feel like the conversation around Zywoo previously was that he wasn't as flashy. But the last couple tournaments I've watched him, he's flashy as fuck. So I...
Okay.
Like, the thing that's most impressive is not just... Like, you can be the best opper. You're not going to be as good with the other weapons, but Zywoo is somehow.
Right.
I've never seen that before. Like, being able to kill this many people in this, like, in various ways with these fucking pistols is... It's incredible. Just truly a fucking god.
Let's say we make a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is the best player in the world with a weapon. What rating do you give Simple and Zywoo on pistols, rifles, and off?
I haven't watched enough Simple lately because he hasn't been in any fucking tournaments.
But you would give Zywoo 10 out of 10 on all three.
M4
that doesn't mean he has to be literally the best on all three, but it means that he's within shooting distance of all three.
If he's in within shooting distance, 10 at all, for sure.
Yeah.
There's like no drop-off.
That's pretty
like,
crazy.
The fact that there's no drop-off between weapons is just that alone is incredible. And I've never seen that. But yeah.
I don't know what a Dota comparison of that would be.
Somebody that CSs really well and also doesn't choke.
Someone who's just very, very high skill at every role, I guess, to an extent. But I mean, it's still, the skill set is just very different, right? But it's just, it's interesting. I wonder who would be the best Dota player if you did like a scale of 1 to 10 on every role of all five.
No tail.
Right now. Like who? Oh, no, right now. Who would be the best?
That's a good question. I don't know.
And No-Tail, I can't even say for a fact either, because he has played a lot of the roles really well, but he hasn't played, you know, no player plays all of them at a given point in time.
Yeah.
And that's the comparison we're making here, is that Zai was good with all the weapons at the same time.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously, like you said, it's not a one-to-one.
I wonder who would be really good at every role right now. That would be such an interesting experiment to make some sort of all-star tournament. I don't know how you
would
do it, though.
That would be cool. Yeah. But... All right, next, best and worst games of the year.
So this needs to be releases from this year, right?
No.
Games we played.
It doesn't have to be, but...
Okay, so just...
It can be.
The best experiences we've had with video games this year.
Yeah.
Okay, fair. That changes mine, maybe.
Okay, I can go first if you need to.
Uh-huh, okay.
I think the best game and the worst game are the same.
Okay, it's Dota. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's Dota. It's actually Counter-Strike. So, as you guys know, since I talked about CS a lot, I played Valorant for a couple years, and it felt amazing. And then I realized I really hate the abilities. I wish I could play Counter-Strike. And then CS2 comes out, and it gives me an opportunity to rekindle this fire, and I've been fucking obsessed with it. So in that aspect, I have loved CS2. It's also the worst game of the year because, and I'm, okay, so what I'm going to say is going to sound like I'm joking. I genuinely feel this way. I do not think that the Valve devs actually play CS2. I genuinely don't think so. And when I say that, I don't mean get into a server with each other and play. I'm talking about join their actual matchmaking, play games on the server. I don't think they do it because this... on some levels has been some of the worst fucking gameplay I have experienced. The subtick system is completely god-awful. It's gotten better than it was originally. That's true. But it comes to the question, like, you put in so many resources. Just what is the point in which you just say, let's cut our losses and do 128 tick? What is that point? I don't know. Should have already happened. They implemented some nice quality of life stuff from Valorant, like the buy system, except they half-assed it. Dropping weapons is still a huge pain in the ass. You have to control click, your gun flies across the screen. Oh, somebody else picked it up. I guess I'm fucked then. Like, why does this exist? No particular reason other than just not feeling like adding that feature. Weapons are horribly imbalanced. And this was the issue with CSGO, which is why I stopped playing it after a while. Keep in mind, I was playing a lot of CS Source, Switch to Go. And I hated a lot of the balance changes they made. And then after a couple of years, they fixed it. But at that point, I'd already stopped playing. Submachine guns, way too fucking broken. You can jump around like a goddamn fucking monkey and kill people. There's literally strats in professional play where you're getting boosted on overpass and you jump and spam with a submachine gun in midair and you get a kill. That is not fucking Counter-Strike. They obviously do not play the game. Shotguns, ridiculous. The long-range aspect of shotguns should not exist. They should literally be useless at long range. I can kill people at long range with an auto shotty. Should not be a thing. I mean, I can go on and on. The tick rate thing is the biggest, though. And the matchmaking system is... Matchmaking in general, when you talk about ranks, hasn't really been around that long. It's been maybe a little over a decade now. Since
this matchmaking thing is so funny to me, because in my friend group, I play CS2 once in a while with them.
Yeah.
Their MMRs, the span of their ratings relative to how good they are is so fucking funny. It's, one of them got shafted so hard. He's so much better than his rank.
Yes.
Like, if I calibrate, I might calibrate higher than him, and he's clearly better than me.
So the matchmaking really system is, first of all, the pick ban of the premiere is really good and really interesting, because you get a new map every time. You're actually using strategy to see like what the other team picks versus yours and try to strategize what you want to play. Really cool. The issue is they use a number system with the MMR, which is fine inherently. It's a little boring because you get to the next rank and it's like, oh, my color changed. Whoopee. Mm-hmm. Might as well just use fucking badges at that point. But the real issue is, number one, your play does not make any difference with your MMR at all. Mm-hmm. I can drop 30 after 30 after 30. Somebody can drop...
It's win-loss only, right?
Win-loss like only. Which I think in CS is criminal, because it's more obvious that somebody is better based on certain aspects of Counter-Strike versus Dota, I would argue. And the second thing, the rank-up system. Every 5,000 MMR, you have a rank-up game, right? So let's say you have 4,998 MMR. You can only gain one MMR that game, and then you have a placement match to try to get over the hump. Now, the issue with this is sometimes you just get stuck in these fucking placement matches because it's trying to 50-50 you, right? You're trying to get you to win 50% of the time. And players, and I've had this experience, that are objectively far worse than you will be they'll go a little bit ahead of you, right? So they'll be above that threshold already. You get stuck in this endless loop of going back and forth. You're stuck here. Meanwhile, they gained 3,000 MMR. It's fucking it. The numbers literally mean nothing. Like, literally nothing. I have never, in all of my 30 plus years of gaming, have ever seen a ranking system which is worse than this. Genuinely, the worst rank MMR system that has ever existed in gaming, to my experience. Fucking pathetic. They do not actually play their own game. Now, if they come up with a huge patch that fixes literally all these issues, I will eat my words. I was going to say something physical, but I don't actually want to eat anything physical in case might happen.
Oh.
Well, no, I was going to say sock, but I'm not going to eat anything, actually.
Oh.
So,
how about one whole tomato?
No, that's way too much. So, in conclusion...
Okay, would you rather eat a boiled sock or a whole tomato?
A tomato.
Okay.
Because one won't kill me. Yeah, so in conclusion, Cinderin, it's the best game of the year for me because I don't play that many other games anyway, and I've really enjoyed getting back into the grind of playing Counter-Strike, following it, all that stuff. But it's also been the worst because it feels like the devs literally have no idea what they're doing. And I hope that they fix the stuff, because when CSGO came out, it took them 2 years to fix very basic issues. In CS2, I feel like a lot of slack would exist for them if they just called it a beta, or they let people play CSGO or whatever. But instead, they came out with CS2. It's worse in so many other ways to CSGO. And you thought that they would fix this whole, if you want to play even semi-seriously, you need to buy a subscription with an outside service to play a game with... Don't even get me started with anti-cheat. How do you not have fucking actual anti-cheat in this game? Oh! Oh, all right.
All right. Well, here's my worst game of the year.
Go ahead.
Where I thought, I was like, what's my worst game of the year? And now, after listening to you talk so much shit about CSGO, CS2 rather, maybe it's CS2, but I haven't really experienced any of your stuff. What, but you're just winning me over, you know, because I barely played.
I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Okay, so for me, it's going to be a tie between... This is a little bit weird, because I didn't really have any truly absolutely atrocious like whole year or single playthrough experience where I was like, this game's just bad.
Can I guess?
It's kind of like you, right? Where you like CS2, but there were downsides.
Can I guess what yours is?
You're going to guess Dota.
No, I was going to guess Diablo.
Yes, that was the other one. So So my two categories for worst game of the year, and that's not because the games are inherently bad, but because the potential just wasn't reached, kind of like with when we talked about worst team or whatever.
Right.
Diablo 4 on launch had no interesting endgame. And it's one of those things like what you said, where then things get patched and they get better and then you just don't come back. That might end up what happens for me. Maybe I'll play it again, but I kind of lost interest. The game was fun for 40 hours, which, you know, it's decent. I mean, you paid for a title, you played it for 40 hours. You didn't get ripped off, but I was just really hoping for more. I was talking about this game potentially being, you know, Blizzard redeeming themselves a little bit. For me, didn't really do it. The cinematics were awesome. The story was fun. The gameplay was solid, but not outstandingly incredible. And yeah, once I finished the story and I started playing a bit of the post game, I was like, this is just not that interesting compared to something like Path of Exile, which you're always going to compare these games to because it's kind of the golden standard at this point. The other one is when Dota was at its worst, my overall matchmaking experience, when it was at its worst with tons of griefers and shit just flaming.
You just stopped playing, basically.
Bad actors. There was a time this year that I think I didn't play Dota for like a month and a half, which is kind of unprecedented for me, but I just really was not enjoying myself. And it got better again. And now I'm playing regularly and I'm having more fun. But there was a time this year that was just atrocious. So that's, again, they can like kind of tie for how much potential the games have and how bad they were at their worst.
Yeah, that's a good
list. Best game of the year for me is between, so the reason I asked about launch date is that of games that were released this year, my best experience was Chants of Sinnar. It's one of the games I talked about in my recommendations. And probably my best gameplay experience overall this year, which is a game that came out last year, I probably have to give to Tunic. That game is incredible. I don't know if I should do at some point some sort of a best of, because I've recommended, what am I on now, like 10 or 12 games, and I have a couple more in the pipeline. Probably, like, Tunic has to be in the top three of those games, probably. Just really, really cool game. And if you want to gift yourself something for Christmas or someone else or for the new year, I would still very much recommend you should play Tunic. It's super cool. So that's my best game of the year, even though it came out last year.
Good list. Okay, let's finish with the final topic, best and worst tech of the year. Do you have anything in mind?
This is way more your kind of category, because I haven't really tried any new tech, so I feel like...
You're a fucking for you, it's robot.
For you, it's definitely going to be ChatGPT or AI, right? That's the best. It goes without saying. Your worst tech of the year is going to be... what have you tried? I mean, you also like your Steam Deck, right? Did you get that this year or last year?
I got it last year. No, it's a while ago, yeah.
Even more. What would your worst tech be? Your new automatic bidet.
I don't have one yet, unfortunately.
Yet.
So you don't have anything for this list?
I can't think of anything. Okay. I haven't really tried.
After I say my list, at least the worst tech, maybe that'll open it. I think you'll agree with my worst tech, actually.
Okay.
Best tech, you got it, Cinderin. AI in general, ChatGPT has changed my fucking life, my workflow. It's been amazing. I have a little buddy I can talk to every day now. You know, they don't ignore me unless I message them too much, and then it's forced to ignore. It blocks me for like 3 hours, and I can't talk to them for a bit. But yeah, AI. I know that it's one of those buzzwords that everybody's getting into, and a lot of it is quite useless, I think. But underlying technology behind it is fucking incredible, and the stuff that we're gonna see in the next like 5-10 years is gonna be absurd. It's gonna change so much, and I'm really excited about that. The other thing, which I have not tried, so that's why I'm not making it the best tech, but I found it to be the most intriguing, and I was actually thinking about buying it. I can't believe I'm saying that. Is the Meta Quest 3, which is an AR thing
that
you put on your face. So it's not virtual reality. It's AR instead. So you can, when you put it on, you can still see stuff, right? And the reason I'm bringing that up is because there's an app that I find to be what I consider a killer app. Shit, I actually forgot the name of it. Maybe somebody can type it in.
This is a real killer app.
Well, it's a piano thing. So essentially what you do is the way to make it work best is how I'll explain it, but you can also use it with like a regular piano if you have to, but it's not going to work as well. So let's say you have a MIDI piano where you can plug stuff in. You put on the headset, you plug it in, and you play a song on the Quest, and it maps out your keys on the actual keyboard that you're playing, and it shows the notes as if it's like Guitar Hero coming down.
Right. I think I've heard of this, actually.
Yeah. And if you don't hit it correctly, it just stops until you hit it correctly. That is one of the coolest tech, like, or software additions, like a killer app that I have seen. Like, that is, as much as I love Beat Saber, which is one of my favorite games,
that's really fun.
In theory, again, I haven't tried it yet, so I can't say one way or another. Sounds fucking incredible. And I definitely want to try it out. Because I fucking suck at piano, and I've always kind of wanted to play, but I don't want to put in the time, and this just feels like almost like you're playing a game, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay.
So the prospect of that software is to teach you to play piano or to have fun? Like, do you actually learn the?
Yeah, you can actually learn. It can has a bunch of settings.
So it is like educational. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Let me see if I can quickly search the name. Piano app. Is it called Piano Vision? I think it's called Piano Vision. Again, I don't know.
For some reason, that sounds familiar, but I don't know if
they've had some older versions, which apparently have existed, and they looked really cool. But this new version does everything that you would expect it to. So really cool.
Piano Vision is a MetaQuest application that accelerates your piano learning experience using mixed reality and hand tracking. Connect a MIDI keyboard or play blah blah blah.
Yeah, so technically you can play on a regular piano. You can play with no piano, literally using like your desk. But the best way to use it is if you have a MIDI keyboard that can hook up to it.
Right.
Anyway, that blew me away.
Cool. All right, what's your worst?
Worst tech of the year, and you will 100% agree with me on this, is Twitter, which has now turned to X.
Does that count as tech?
That's what's the tech world, of course.
I mean, what's the new tech? It's the same tech, just worse.
Exactly. That's
I guess that's new. Fair because we selected. Yeah. Okay.
So sure, Twitter, which is now new, called
true.
X. Oh, yeah. On some level, I am happy about it because now the people that aren't fanboys that just follow whatever anyone says without even, you know, paying attention to what's going on in their fucking surroundings can now see in plain sight what type of a person Elon Musk is. Holy shit, he has shit the bed harder than anyone that I've seen buying a company. Like, how could you fuck up that bad? Advertisers now running out the window because everything is alt-right. He told advertisers to go fuck themselves, which is hilarious. It's just it's like watching a reality TV show just in front of your eyes. It's a fucking train wreck that you can't look away. And on the other side, it's a shame because that's the social media other than Reddit, which I don't really post in. I use it all the time though. Twitter was the biggest social media for me, which I barely use at all now, and I know that you don't at all either.
I definitely use it way less than I used to, and I almost never post anymore.
Yeah.
And I think it's a combination of the changes that happened to it in terms of reach, like when you do post stuff, whether people see it, and also the page that you get offered. I feel like a lot of the stuff that I might want to see from people I follow gets drowned out in random popular tweets that just get eyeballs, right? It's kind of gone the same path that Facebook did with the Facebook front page, where it's also, you know, just min-maxing, seeing stuff that other people like, which might not even at all have to be people that you have in your friends list. It's just, this is a popular thing in general, therefore you, on average, will like it. And I get it. I mean, I understand why they're doing it and what the purpose is, and it might make more money, but it does take away a lot of the appeal for me. And I like Twitter for following and seeing stuff from the people that I follow or seeing stuff that they thought was interesting. But you just get served up tons and tons of just random, essentially garbage. And yeah, you can consume it a little bit, but like that whole personal flavor of this was the community that I was a part of is kind of getting drowned out, I think is the best way to put it. So yeah, that sucks. And I would agree. I think this overall, compared to what it used to be, this is probably the most degraded tech that I have had anything to do with. And I'm pretty sure if Elon bought it and changed nothing, it would have been way better. So literally just degraded.
That's right. Okay. Well, that is 2023 in a nutshell, according to Sindarin and SunsFan. Let us know what you agree and disagree with in the comments. We appreciate you. I hope that you guys...
It's going to be...
Yeah?
I think for best game of the year, there's going to be a lot of people saying Baldur's Gate 3. And I am playing a campaign with three friends of mine, and I am enjoying it. And it is a very good game. But I also think... There's still something really special about really, really well-done indie games that I think can be different or difficult to compete with. I think last year my game of the year would have probably been Hades, right? As well. Despite there being some AAA titles that are also really fun and have longevity and are good to play.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say keep in mind for people, and I know we've said this already, that everybody's criteria of what is the best is going to be different. Yeah. So keep it clean, as it were. Because like the games that I gave or any of the categories, that's my personal take for myself.
I mean,
it's not.
Yeah.
If I was picking the best game of the year overall for people, it's probably something that I'd never even played before. So why would I even talk about it?
And the worst game of the year would definitely be some sort of garbage $1 Steam game.
No, it would be Counter-Strike 2. All right.
Okay. Fair enough.
So with that, we hope you. Wait, did you have a good Christmas, by the way? Didn't even talk about that. How were your holidays?
Yeah, it was
How was your birthday?
It was fine. I played CS2. No, I didn't, because I was having a good day.
That's right. That's good, boy.
I wonder if there's like a $1 Steam game that has better matchmaking than Steam.
I'd rather have no matchmaking at that point. My goodness.
What a random little... Oh, man, that's too funny. All right. Yeah, I had a good Christmas. I hope you did, too. And I hope everybody out there had a good Christmas or holiday, whatever you guys celebrate.
Yep, and
it was
also...
nice and relaxed. I spent the day at home first with Susie and my dog, and then I went to my parents for a few days. And it was very, very nice and chill. A lot of good food.
What did you get for onion?
You don't necessarily get your dog a gift.
Oh,
they don't really,
it my
doesn't really work the same way.
God, you don't give Onion a fucking gift?
He got a nice Christmas meal.
No.
And he got different food as well.
No.
He did not get any. He did not get a gift that's not food.
First of all, incorrect pet ownership. Okay? Not only did our cat.
Right, I'll get Susie. I'll tell her we're doing a very bad job.
Where are you going? What is it?
Would you like to defend yourself? Shannon says we're very bad pet owners because we didn't get Lai a Christmas present.
That's right.
Okay, she's getting a toy that he got, which he didn't technically get on Christmas, but he got it in December.
So he's already, you're re-gifting a gift that he's already seen?
Well, he didn't get it on Christmas Eve, which is the day we give gifts in Denmark. So technically, it wasn't a Christmas gift, but it is.
Hello. Is this where I make my debut in this podcast?
Yeah.
I didn't brush my hair today. This is a squeaky toy with a Christmas hat. That's a Christmas gift. I just don't have patience. So he got it right away.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Fair enough. Next time, put it in a wrapper for him to open, okay?
Okay, you need to wrap it for Christmas and have him open it again to get disappointed that it's the same thing. Shannon, you're a bad pet owner. You're re-gifting something he already had.
Not only did our cats get gifts, but Monkey, who's the best cat, of course, gave a gift to someone, unbeknownst to me. It was an incredible experience, actually. Just incredible.
If anything, Susie's an amazing pet owner because she realized that this gift is so good and the dog is going to love it so much that she didn't stall and wait for Christmas, but gave it early. And he loves this toy, by the way.
Good.
So
that's a
it
good
was
boy.
A hit.
That's a good boy.
So he did get a Christmas present. He just didn't get it on Christmas.
I see.
I didn't All actually right. know that she counted it as a Christmas present. So I learned something today.
Good.
Wonderful.
All right, everyone. Let us know in the comments if you give gifts to your pets for Christmas and if Cinderin is evil. Enjoy the rest of your holidays. Have a good New Year's, everybody. We love you. Thanks for supporting the podcast, as always. I think my New Year's resolution, our New Year's resolution, Cinderin, which is going to be you doing it, because I can't be bothered to.
Does this start with M and end with Urch?
That's right. We're going to... Cinderin is going to figure out merch for you guys. How about that?
We're going to make Miraculous Perch.
All right, we'll just call it a night. Have a great New Year's, everybody. Until next time, Suns fan and Cinderin signing out. Peace!
We say things that don't subscribe. Mean,
but thanks for listening. Yeah.